not supposed to stand in front of those things and talk, I think. Good evening. How is everybody? I graduated last in my class from college. I did. I graduated from college with a 2.2 grade point average. And it's kind of fun, and I eventually figured out how to study, but it's kind of fun to go back and talk. And the point being, let's not give up on our kids. What do you say? Let's not give up on our kids. It was a horror show for mom and dad, but they stuck with me. And I'm thankful for that. What do we got here? I can't remember what we're talking about tonight, so let's, you fire away with that. Oh, that's me. Okay, now do I hit the top one?
Yeah,
the top one. And I aim it this way and not that way, correct? Could you? Really? It works. And I'm mischievous too. So. Addiction. Yeah, I am. I really am. But, you know, I think some of Christ's disciples were mischievous also, were they not? So. Addiction. It's a chronic disease with genetic. It's actually have inheritable components with addiction. Certainly psychological stuff and environmental factors. It's progressive. And it's characterized by impaired control over the behavior and preoccupation with the behavior. Now get this. Despite adverse consequences. This is really the tripwire of addiction. We're going to talk about the internet tonight, and there's discussion about whether it's an addictive disorder or not. And I'm going to cover that a little bit, and then I'm going to get into how the internet is probably a very strong disruptor of families in all of your congregations, not just a few, all of them. There's outrageously good things going on the internet today. But there are problems. The question is whether it's addictive or not. We'll go into. So to be addictive, it has to be associated with consequences, no? And people who have addictions practice those behaviors in spite of the consequences. I remember so well when I was a resident in surgery, and we had a guy with Berger's disease who had lost. It's a condition where the arteries in your body, particularly in the extremities, go into spasm and you lose blood flow. This guy was 41 years old. He had had both legs amputated just from smoking, and it's reversible. You quit and it stops. He'd lost both legs below the knees, continued to smoke. He lost both legs above the knees, continued to smoke. He lost both legs thigh high, so he was an amputee at the pelvis. In his wheelchair in the hospital, when he was still smoking in hospitals, he had ashtrays bolted to both handles of the wheelchair. That's addiction. Behavior in spite of consequences. Addiction is, you're on the internet so much, I never see you anymore. Did a little bit of pornography there? The relationship starts to fall apart. The behavior doesn't change. That's addiction. I asked Dr. Linda Ferry, who did some of the best research that we know on nicotine today, and she's a Loma Linda. How many people with emphysema on oxygen have you ever treated in your life at the VA hospital who couldn't quit smoking even though they're on oxygen? She said, thousands. Thousands. These aren't easy things. We in this church often trivialize the complexity of behaviors by saying, you need to quit. And if you quit, then you can be one of us. Quitting is a process. It's a huge process for most, not for all. Some people can quit easily, others don't. 8% of people who quit smoking become suicidal. 8%. So it can be a very, very severe medical condition and treated sometimes with medication and certainly with testing and all, counseling and all kinds of things for those who have a hard time quitting. But that's not what we're talking about tonight. So neurobiologists, the people who study the chemicals of the brain, say that in order for the internet to be substantiated as an addiction, there's got to be some chemical in your brain that can be identified that plays into its use, and we haven't identified that yet. Certainly, these neurochemicals, these things in your brain that are involved with pornography, but not with general, are involved with pornography, not with general internet use. We know that the brain does very similar things with pornography as it does with cocaine. Very, very similar. So the internet. Think of the internet this way. The internet is the shopping center. I don't know anybody who is addicted to shopping centers, but I know people who are addicted to shopping. Okay? The internet's just the big building that holds all the little stores. To say the internet itself is addictive is probably a stretch. To say that gambling, gaming, shopping, pornography, lots of other things are addictive, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're talking about, and I hope to be able to sort these out as we go, so we're talking about general internet use, which robs time from relationships, versus content use. You're playing games all night long, you know, 8 o'clock at night till 5 o'clock in the morning. We did a study on the impact of the internet on families, and we did it in amongst the faith group in Seattle. And I learned something from that, and that's that I'll never study a faith group again. Because you can't get reliable responses from them if you go to a church and say, we want you to fill out a questionnaire about you, about, we can get it with kids. I've done a lot of research on Adventist kids and drug use and stuff, and we can get great answers. We can't get it from adults. And this wasn't an Adventist sample. This is the Christian churches. And we asked 33,400 people to fill out internet questionnaires. 600 of them did. Out of 33,000, nobody did anything they weren't supposed to be doing. This is the cleanest, squeakiest goop you've ever seen in your life. So what I learned from that is that we can actually sample the general population at large and say, how often do you attend church? And if they attend church more than twice a month, then they're church members. And then we can study their behaviors. But that way, they don't think somebody from their church is watching over their shoulder while they're asking questions or while they're answering questions. We found out that the average, and this is in Seattle where there's a high level of socioeconomics. People make money there. They're well educated there. And every time spent viewing television, internet was about a day a week, 25 hours a week. You think this might be getting into your family life? Partypoker.com. Ever heard? Have you noticed how much poker is on TV today? Has 70,000 users per second. Per second. It's not even legal in America yet. This is European. In fact, in the state of Washington, it's illegal. If you get caught gambling on the internet and you're a resident of the state of Washington and you're in the state, you can actually be fined for it and arrested. Partypoker.com. These are all European, Caribbean, whatever. Poker's turned into such a huge issue today, probably one of the most common reasons for admission for adolescents to treatment centers for addictions today is gambling. If you go to the ESPN, the sports website, and they list sports on the left-hand side, basketball, baseball, football, gambling, or poker. Poker is listed as a sport. It's listed as a sport on ESPN. Amazing. 70,000 users a second. Very, very, very difficult addiction to treat. Very. Now, when we talk about addictions, we never talk about cures. We talk about treatments. We talk about therapies. Not unlike most of medicine at large, actually. We don't cure diabetes. We treat it. We don't cure hypertension. We treat it. We don't cure gambling. We treat it. Okay? For many of these things, the treatment is spiritual. Isn't it? Isn't it? You know that it is. Okay, let's move on. Pornography. If these things don't blow your mind, I don't know what can. Pornography revenue exceeds professional football, baseball, basketball combined. Combined. Also exceeds all the revenues from NBC, CBS, and ABC combined. And $12 billion in the U.S., $57 billion worldwide in 2005. Porn right now is bigger than Hollywood. Hollywood's biggest 30, I should say. Biggest 30 movies in Hollywood don't make as much money as pornography does today. More than 32 million unique individuals visited a porn site in September of 2003. They're mostly males. About a third of those were females. 72 million people worldwide will visit internet porn sites this year, and that was 3 years ago. Unique users monthly visiting adult websites, about 45 million. How do you like that? In America, adults admitting to internet sex addiction is about 10% in 2005, and about 28% of those are women. So this isn't just a man problem. It's primarily a man problem, but it's not uniquely a man problem, male problem. Women look at, by the way, what's considered to be pornography, women and men are two different things. Men look at images, women look at situations. They look at fantasy relationships and things. 20% of men admitted to accessing porn at work. How do you like that? 90% of 8 to 16-year-olds have viewed online pornography, mostly while doing homework. Average age of first exposure is about 11 years of age. The question isn't will your grandkids and kids see it. The question is how often will they see it? My mother called me when she was 81. She's 88 now. And I taught her how to do a search on Yahoo back before Google was big and to cook Indian recipes. And Mom likes to knit. And so she called me. She says, I'm on a porn site. And I said, pervert. What are you doing there, Mom? Get out of there. You know, I don't want to get out of there. Hit the back. Oh, that's right. Hit the, okay. She said, how did you get there? My mother didn't ever use a four-letter word in her life. She's this perfect little lady. And I go, Mom, how'd you get there? Well, I don't know. I knit sweaters and booties for the children's hospital at Loma Linda, and I just wanted to find some more booty patterns. It seems as though some of these words have changed in meaning, no? I said, Mom, don't be searching on that anymore. In 2003, the largest consumers of the internet porn were 12 to 17-year-old age group. How do you like that? 90% of 8 to 16-year-olds have viewed online porn mostly. Oh, I already did that one, didn't I? I'm sorry. Average age of first exposure light. Did that twice. I must have hit backwards. 20% of 7 to 17-year-olds surveyed in 2003 would freely give their email addresses out. Doesn't that scare the life out of you? 1 in 5 who use computer chat rooms have been approached over the internet by pedophiles. 1 in 5. These are your kids. These are your grandkids. Are you talking to them? Is your relationship superb with them so they'll talk to you? Do they trust you as a safe place to go with the information that they're getting off the internet? Can they come to you and say, I got scared today on the internet? Is your relationship that good? Have you opened those doors for them? Because if you haven't, you need to. And it's not just for your kids, it's for your grandkids. And it may not just be for them, it may be for the neighbor kids. But you've got to have the great relationship in order to have the effective communication. And we've actually published that. Great relationships drive effective communication. Can you smile? Can you talk? Are you trustable? I can talk to you. That's the logical sequence of events. Can you talk to that guy? No, he's a jerk. Can you talk to that guy? He's great. He treats me well. Sure, I can talk to him. It's the relationship that's going to allow that to happen. 89% of sexual solicitations were made in either chat rooms or internet messages. Chat rooms. Oof. The only chat room I go into is I collect fishing lures, and we talk about fishing lures in this chat room. 1 in 5 receives a sexual solicitation last year. 1 in 33 received sexual solicitation that was aggressive. Like, can I meet you and all that kind of stuff. Did you ever watch any of these reports that was on Nightline for a while where the undercover cops actually chased these guys around? Did you see any of those? Yeah, some of them were done in Southern California. The police set up a room where they would sit down and get into conversations with kids, young kids. And the undercover policemen were posing as young kids, and they were getting solicited. So they'd say, well, come on by the house. And the cops were there to arrest them, and they walked in on national television with alcohol for these young kids and with all kinds of sexual material and stuff. It's scary, and it was happening right here. One of them was a pastor. One of them was a Jewish rabbi. Several doctors, a bunch of teachers, cops. I watched 6 or 8 of those things. Amazing stuff. 25% of youth who receive sexual solicitation told a parent, that's not good enough. That is not good enough. We've got to be talking to our kids and our grandkids about the stuff they're going to see on the Internet. The question isn't will they. The question is how often will they. Internet accessible computers are now commonplace in the majority. And listen, over 75% of homes with children between the ages of 8 and 18, and that's an increase of more than 25% since 1999. And almost all of those are connected by high-speed internet today. Almost all of those. If it weren't for pornography, there wouldn't be streaming video. It's the pornography industry that drove the capacity for people to use streaming video on the internet. Annenberg Policy Center found that 78% of U.S. parents are worried about their adolescents viewing porn online. To talk about it. Most parents in a recent Pew Internet and America Life Project study believe their children were not careful enough when sharing personal information. All right. Here's some consequences. Exposure to X-rated videos amongst black adolescent females. This was published about 6 or 7 years ago. This study was done by some friends of mine who were at Emory University when they were at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and they actually looked at consequences to viewing X-rated videos, and that kind of research is very sparse. They found out that they have negative attitudes for condom use, with having multiple sexual partners, and more frequently sexual, and they were in more frequent sexual encounters, and they were more likely to test positive for sexually transmitted infections. There are consequences to this stuff. Now, you know deep in their heart that there are going to be consequences, but the research literature has not been good at identifying those and measuring them. Converging evidence has emerged from investigations with kids and young adults in culturally diverse contexts, indicating that exposure to porn facilitates and fosters sexual promiscuousness and promotes engagement in promiscuous sexual behaviors. There is no doubt. And the world in America, we have three experts on pornography. One of those, his name is Jim Weaver. He's a good friend. I just talked to him on the phone today, actually. And he'd come talk to you guys if you ever wanted him to. He's a Christian guy. I went to the U.S. Senate to go with Jim when he testified before the Senate on pornography. And he will tell you, after 25 years of researching, there's no doubt this stuff's not good for you. There's just no doubt about it. And I tell you, when he was there before the Senate to testify, the porn industry was there with all guns blazing, with their attorneys, but not to fight, but to try to win him over. You should have seen them patting him on the back and thanking him for his good work. And, you know, how soon can we get you into our checkbook so we can get you off the stage trying to stop this stuff? And he just kind of giggles at him. You're not getting me. Very interesting guy to be with. Studies, let's see. The studies for young adults show that exposure to porn during adolescence is negatively correlated with the viewer's age at first sex, positive link to estimated number of sexual partners, and is a predictor of perpetration of sexual violence. Families. Okay, let's slow down here. Let's talk about what this stuff's doing to families. And it's not just porn, but it's internet use at large. That was some background information. At the 2002 meeting of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, two-thirds of the 350 divorce lawyers who attended said that the internet played a significant role in divorces in the past year. Two-thirds. With excessive internet interest in online porn contributing to more than half of such cases. And this wasn't even mentioned in divorces up to 8 years ago. We have something new that's ruining marriages today. And it's not just pornography, it's the internet at large. So here's a typical story. I live in North Idaho, not far from Coeur d'Alene. So let's say, is there such thing as a typical family in Coeur d'Alene? I don't know. I'm going to make one up. Let's pretend for a second that this is a typical family. She's 34, he's 37, they're Mormon, have two kids, expecting a third one. And he goes to work, gets home at 5:30, on the computer at 5:45. Off the computer at midnight, to bed, up at 6, on the computer, off to work at 6:45 in the morning. And that's life. And I really mean, that's life. And all of a sudden, you got a woman sitting here going, you know, I'm not the breadwinner in the family. I'm sitting here home with the kids. He's not even talking to me anymore. Something's going on that computer. I don't know what it is. Even if she knew what it is, she doesn't know what to do about it. Doesn't have a clue. And she's going, what now? Is this life? And I tell you what, you know what? It well could be. Pornography has an almost non-existent role in divorce just 7 to 8 years ago. But you had to go to the store to get it, and that was embarrassing. You get it off the computer now. Narrative evidence illustrates that many women experience the discovery of pornography usage by their intimate partner as a traumatic event that inspires doubts about the relationships. And I'm going to, and the character of their partner, and I'm going to go into that here just a little bit. Consumption of porn also appears to threaten the welfare of children and families by creating economic instability. It's not always free. It can be very expensive. And then all of a sudden you're into the addictive part too. And it can cause you to run up huge credit card bills. Increasingly, U.S. businesses are imposing disciplinary actions, including termination on employees because of inappropriate porn use at the workplace. When I was at Loma Linda full-time, I accidentally hit a porn site one time, and the screen went dark blue, and I got a message, and I was out of there in a flash. It never happened again. Did any of you ever gotten that message? Yeah. Did you raise your hand? Well, then I won't tell them who you are. I thought you were confessing of something back there. No. Yeah, no, you just go, whoa, that's supposed to be here, and you get out. And they know that up in IT. They're going, yeah, okay, he hit it by accident. Good enough. You're on there for like a little while. Not such a good thing. 47% of families polled said that porn was a problem in their home. Did you get this 47% of people polled? This isn't about them. This is about us. This is us. This is, if 40% of any poll said this is a problem, then it's a problem here. You know, this is a huge problem. By channeling sexually explicit content into the millions of homes, get this, in hotel rooms, pornography producers are and corporate America profit together. DirecTV, Rupert Murdoch, parent company of Fox News, makes $20 million a month on porn over DirecTV. A month. AT&T generates similar income distributing porn through broadband internet services. All of the top 50 U.S. hotel chains, with the exception of Omni Hotels, offer pornography to their guests, with sales accounting for nearly 70% of their in-room profits. As much as 10% of the annual profits of the hotel chains are derived from guests viewing pornography. Think about, let you know, ruminate on it. By the way, if any of you want to make someone sick with these data, you're welcome to have the PowerPoint slide. In other words, the production and distribution of porn has rapidly evolved from a cottage industry to a stable, well-financed, mass production scale faith communities. That would be us, huh? Members of faith-based communities are not, of course, exempt. For example, in a 2001 study through Christianity Today, 36% of members of Christian churches reported that they had visited sexually explicit websites. 33% of the clergy in the same sample reported having viewed pornographic material on the internet. When the same responses were asked about the use of sexually explicit websites over the previous year, 53% of clergy and 44% of laity said that they had. This is done at Northwestern University, commissioned by Christianity Today. Among the clergy, 18% said they had visited explicit websites a couple of times per month and more than once a week. I don't know why it says in right there. Oh, in August 2000, 20% of all the calls received by Focus on the Family Pastoral Care Line were about pastors and online porn, a 9% increase from the previous year. I don't have numbers from 2008, but it's going up fast. Youth in the campuses, this is from Andrews University, 75% of males and 25% of females reported purposely visiting an internet pornography website. Those numbers exactly match national averages. Exactly match national averages. Focus group findings, very interesting stuff. There's a group, it's called Prodigals International. It's in the Pacific Northwest, based in Seattle, and it's a faith-based 12-step sexual addiction program. And it's for people who have porn problems or other sexual addictions. And so we initially were working with Prodigals International in creating and coming up with data for the study we were doing on the internet and families. And so one of my colleagues, a female, who worked with us on the study, she did a focus group on women, 8 or 9 women, whose husbands were in Prodigal's 12-step program for addiction, sexual issues. All of them to porn except for one was seeing prostitutes. And so Wendy asked the women, where did you first go for help? All but one said we went to our pastor. All but one said we went to our pastor. What did he say? No, they all went to their pastor. All but one pastor said, women, you need to spice it up. And that's not the right answer. This is not about women. This is about the husband in this case. And it doesn't, and the responsibility falls completely on him, not on her. So the women said, now he's guilt-giving. He's given 25, 30% tithes. And we can't afford it. And she noticed anything about us, and Wendy said, what's that? She said, well, we've all gained weight. We're all wearing really long, non-revealing clothing, and we all just pretty much discussed it with this whole situation. Men see these images as images in a general way. Women see these images as cheating, as breach of marital contract. Women and men do not see the same thing when they view the same image and it's pornographic. It's different. Guys don't get it. Women don't get that guys don't get it. And we need to be having lots and lots of discussions about this stuff right up front. We need to be talking to our college kids and our high school kids about who they're dating, how much that person is on the internet, and can you talk about content? Because this stuff will interfere with your marriage. It's not if. It will interfere with your marriage. It will. And women don't like this stuff. Isn't that right, women? Do you want to be a little bit more? I mean, how much don't you like this stuff? A lot. You see, guys don't get that. Isn't that interesting? And you would expect that they would understand that very clearly, huh? Guys don't get that real clearly. They think it's pictures. Yes, they do. Men see this as, they're just actresses, they're just pictures. Women see this as, you just broke the marital vows. Guys don't see it like that. By the way, I'm not talking about all guys. I'm not talking about all women. I'm talking in generalities. Allow me to speak in generalities. You can draw your own specific conclusions on your own. Let me speak in generalities. Differences in perception of porn, we just talked about that. I believe that inpatient care facilities will spring up at least in the United States for treatment of internet obsession and addiction. I believe that this is going to be an inpatient treatment issue. I don't think people can beat this condition without assistance. I don't think if you catch your spouse in it and you want to work with them on it, get them into treatment and get them in fast. Don't listen to this, I'll take care of it. There's no taking care of it. It needs help. I gave a talk once at a ministerial meeting somewhere in America, and the education people said to me, would you come by, because we're having a meeting here too, and do a worship? And I said, sure. I talked about this a little bit, and the guy followed me out. And he said, I've been in Sexaholics Anonymous, don't tell anybody, for the last 2 years. It's been the most spiritual event of my life. Help is available. And help with a Christ-centered focus is available. And we can get those things right into our churches. I believe that any of you could go home, talk to the people in your area who are Christian counselors. You may not have any in your church, but there'll be one down the street in a Methodist church somewhere. You'll find them. There are Christian counselors in every community. Hopefully you've got some. And say, look, I want to do an outreach. I want to do an outreach. What can we offer people who come in for help? I think you can put a little ad in the newspaper saying, is the internet or pornography a problem in your home? Give us a call. I think you're in for lots of phone calls. Lots and lots of phone calls. Because there are people sitting out there going, particularly women, going, I don't even know who to tell. How do you help with this thing? And when I give these talks, you can't believe the number of people that come to me and say, oh, let me tell you my story. One of them was a doctor and a psychiatrist in Australia, and she said, yeah, my husband was an Adventist pastor who went back to medical school and then wanted to become a brain surgeon and then got into pornography, then he got into cocaine, then he got into prostitutes, and now he's an alcoholic. And the stories just go on and on. I hear these things constantly. I just hear them constantly. You guys, there's an outreach in your community. And these are business people. These are middle-class, clean, squeaky clean people who are just dying to get out of this addiction. I wrote an article on pornography in the Adventist Review in 2001, and it got more feedback than any non-doctrinal article ever written for the Review. I got emails for a long period of time. My email address has changed, or I may still be getting some. And they were saying, after 35 years, I don't know what to do. I just got one a few months ago from a guy in the Pacific Northwest who said, he's 63. He says, and I knew what he was talking about. He just says, does this ever end? He has nowhere to go. He works for the system. He has nowhere to go. He can't afford to get busted. He just, you know, he's dying for help. And help's available. Help is available. And we can offer that help. It doesn't just have to be for pornography. Women who are in this situation, if he never talks to me anymore, are sitting around going, who's going to help me with this? You can be that organization, but you need skills to do it. And you know what? Those skills are in your community, and you can make those available. It'll be in the form of groups. It'll be in the form of let's get together and talk about it. It'll be in the form of Al-Anon codependency sort of things. They're going to teach you how to confront it in your home. They're going to teach you how to confront it. All right? Screaming and yelling is not going to fix anything. But when he says, oh, I promise never to do it again, that doesn't fix anything either. You know, when I used to teach the addiction class in the School of Public Health at Loma Linda, one of the things I used to teach the students is the way that you can tell when an addict is lying is their lips are moving. And it's not because they want to be dirty liars, it's because that's how they survive, by covering up their addictions. I'm one of those addicts. I've lived that life. It's a tough deal. It's a tough deal. I believe that the basic prevention strategies that we well understand today, which are useful for at-risk behaviors among adolescents, will be effective in preventing consequences of Internet exposures. And most of you may not know what those are. By the way, I don't even know what time I end this thing. 9:30, was that it? Oh. What do I have? I have 15 minutes? Do I have 10 minutes? Do I have 5 minutes? What do I have?
Yes. You have a good 30 minutes.
Oh, do I? Oh, okay. Thank you. Well, I'm not going to take 30 minutes, okay? I won't drive you quite that crazy. But when I got a call from a lady at the Hayden, Idaho church named Lorraine about 2 months ago. And she says, our kids are having problems with the Internet. We want you to come tell us how to prevent that. There is no strategy for preventing that, other than keeping kids busy at the times of day they're most likely to be on the Internet. And for those of you who came to my session this week, here's your answer. You ready for the answer? It's called building character. And it's called building character through spiritual means. From the Bible, your imperative, this isn't a suggestion, this is the command. And what it says in Matthew 25 is your job is to feed them and clothe them. It's to visit them. It's to care for people who have need. Is that not true? Very clear. What we found out from the scientific literature is that kids who engage in service, in one study, the number of kids getting a B average went from 18 to 40%. There's a strong association between grades in school and less drug use. Service is the strongest predictor we know of delaying sex and avoiding teen pregnancy. High school dropout rates decreased from 12 to 1% when kids get engaged in service. They're more likely to go to college. They're more likely to be attracted to church, serve on behalf of the church, and stay in church, according to Value Genesis. They're more likely to be community-oriented for life and have higher self-esteem if you'll get them involved in helping other people, according to the Matthew 25 imperative. How do you like that for a service? How do you like that for an effective prevention strategy? Isn't that wild? And it came out of your Bible. And your Bible says it the same way my Bible says it. Isn't that fascinating? You want kids to be able to avoid this stuff? Not never see it. They're going to see it. But you want this stuff to deflect off their chest like a rubber bullet? Get them involved in service. Give them a purpose in life. That's character-building stuff. The Native American tradition was, way back in, before they took on white man's culture and didn't help, was that when you kill a deer, the purpose of the hunt wasn't to kill, it was the provision of food to a family in need. It was the provision of food to a family in need. Service. I will spend the last 10 years of my life, or my professional career, just dealing with Matthew 25. We're writing scientific articles right now on the value of getting kids involved and helping other people. One of the churches that I did some stuff at recently said, yeah, well, you know, we send kids out to do Bible studies. Why don't you send kids out to rake leaves? And once they got the great relationship, they might ask you for a Bible study. We were doing this stuff in Arizona, and a doctor down there went to Window Rock, and we were working with the Indian groups. And she said, you know, it's interesting you talk about this service stuff. She said, her name is Diane, I forget her last name. And she said, we were cleaning up around my house, and this friend of my daughter's, her daughter passed away from leukemia, had come over to help. So we got things cleaning up, and the lady's house across the street looked terrible. And I knew she was in the hospital, so I said, let's go clean up her yard. So they did. They went across the street, and they were all dirty and sweaty anyway, and they cleaned up her yard. But 6 months later, that lady was home from the hospital, and she said to Diane, she said, Diane, you cleaned up my yard, didn't you? She said, yeah. And then the lady said, can I have a Bible study? And it happened just like that. And that's not going to happen just like that every time. But you know, the relationships are what makes our message credible. It's the relationship that makes them listen to you. You get that? Remember Christ's strategy? Ellen White says it's the only strategy that will work. Is he went into the community, he mingled with the people, he gained their confidence. And then he said, follow me. He didn't say, follow me first. He went into the community, he fed them, he raked their leaves, he split their firewood. We're talking about 20 or 30 minutes a week, maybe twice a week, you and the kids. Three pieces to the puzzle. This is what we're going to do, piece one. Let's go do it, piece two. What did we just do, piece three? Reflection, most important of all three. That's it. This is a no-brainer. You want to be healthy? Eat an orange, drink some water, walk around the block, and get some sunlight. Pretty simple. You don't have to be a nutritionist to understand what it takes to be healthy. Go do something. You want to keep your kids off drugs? Get them involved with service. This has all been made very, very simple to us if we'll just follow the directions of the Bible. Very easy to understand stuff. How do you like that? Who would have figured that service would be the strongest predictor of keeping kids out of sexual behaviors? Who would have figured? It works. So you're out chopping wood, and they say, what are you doing? They say, we're trying to avoid teen pregnancy. You do, you know. Or, of course, the kids go, what? And you know, I'm not doing so well in math. We're trying to increase the grades in school, and people are going to look like you're an idiot. I got the data to support it. And it's all good, hard data. If you want to see kids less damaged by this, let's do character-building things so that though they be exposed, the bullets bounce off. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, I got a different strategy for you. Take away the computer, unplug the television, and you go. And then, I don't know where you're going to live, but they'll be in great shape. Most of us, you know, that's not a winnable strategy. I believe that that technology increases, problems will increase. I saw the CEOs of AT&T and Google. Seems to me it wasn't Google. I thought about that. But anyway, he was asked, the AT&T guy was asked, do you think there'll ever be one device, one electronic device that will cover all things? And he said, well, I got my BlackBerry and I got my iPhone and I got my regular phone and I got my something else. He had four things. He said, by the year 2017, your iPhone will hold enough full-length movies that you can watch steady movies 24 hours a day for 85 years. That's where the technology is going. Okay, so the question isn't will they have it, it's how can we get them through this unhurt, though they're exposed. We don't understand the consequence of constant iPod use with headsets. We just had one in Spokane not too long ago. Dave, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, our grandfather bought an iPod for the grandson. They were standing on a corner in Spokane, and the garbage truck came around the corner, and the kid stepped out in front of the garbage truck, and he ran over and killed him. Do you remember that? It was on the news. And the grandfather said it wasn't the driver's fault. The kid had his iPod for one day, but he didn't hear the truck coming. Stepped out in front of the garbage truck, ran over and killed him. We don't know what damage is coming to kids who are no longer exposed to people who are talking in normal tone of voice. Birds chirping, wind blowing. We don't know. Because they're getting exposed to nothing but electronic stuff constantly. And we don't even know what's going to happen to the brain and judgment and all these kinds of things based upon that lack of exposure. We don't even, you know, it's so, you know, this life that we live without all the electronic stuff is complicated enough. And we complicate it with even more of this stuff. So do I. The research of the future regarding internet will focus on family variables. And it should. Right now, we have what's called the Center for Media Impact Research at Andrews, and Dwayne McBride and I worked through that, and along with several other people across America from different universities, we're the only research organization in America whose primary focus is internet and families. Don't you think we need 100 of them? Amazing. The future of iPods, I just told you that, 85 years of streaming stuff. We have to come to terms with the fact, and you need to do it here and now, that when someone walks into your church, someone in your ministry, it's just life no good. You know, the kids are out of control, the husband's never home anymore, he doesn't talk to me, whatever those things are they're telling you, one of your first questions is, tell me about the computer. What's going on in the computer? And you're going to get crocodile tears that you wouldn't have gotten had you not asked a question. because it's influencing families all over the place. Well, I gave this very same talk with a little bit more scientific stuff in it to the Australian Psychological Association in Sydney 2 years ago, October, and they expected 15 psychologists to come, 115 came. And they're going, whoa, I never had that many before. It's the topic. They don't know me from Adam. I'm not a famous guy. It's the topic, Internet and families. And I said, how many of you are seeing families in your clinical practices whose lives are being interrupted by the Internet? They all raised their hand. All of them. We did, I won't ask you, there are lots of women in the room. I have sat in rooms this size amongst pastors and wives, because I speak at quite a few ministerial meetings, and said, and that's interesting because I'm not a pastor, and generally pastors only invite pastors to speak. And I said, this is for the women. Don't raise your hands. This is for the women. How many of you think the Internet's affected your relationship? I have had 100% of hands go up in some audiences. 100%. So I won't ask this group. But, you know, don't you think it's time to have a talk? What the General Conference Communication Department says is on Friday night across the world, they watched people get onto the Internet. They watched Internet use on GC websites spike every Friday night across the world. And one of my colleagues, my wife, finally came to him on Friday night and said, Duane, Friday night is our night. Turn the computer off. Because he's on there going through spiritual websites and this and that. Duane, turn the computer off. And it's time. How many people do we have in this room who are married less than 3 years? I'm married less than 40 years. Have you guys had this Internet talk yet? That was pretty direct, wasn't it? Well, God doesn't beat around the bush. Have you had the talk? You people who haven't been married too long, have you had the talk? How much are you on the computer? How much time do you spend together talking? We need to communicate. We're not going to let that computer get in the way of our marriage. Don't you think? What kind of questions do we have? Someone must have a question. That was your first non-doctrinal lecture, wasn't it? See what happens when you invite health people in? We don't talk about doctrine because we don't know what to say. No comments? Well, you know what? Why don't you come up and make some comments? Well, we have a question back here. Dave's a troublemaker, but Well, he can.
We ran an ad in the paper that had come along to you that we're going to have a support group for sexual addiction. And we had the Portland TV station came, interviewed me and the fellow that had gotten...
You got that much attention.
It was incredible. The newspaper ran a full...
Your towns can't wait to hear from you, folks.
And we had people drive. We formed a small group in the church over it. We had people drive 2.5 hours one way to come and attend that group.
And if you're afraid of the topic porn, don't go there. Just say, is the Internet infecting your relationship at home? Give us a call. Content is a different deal. Same treatment, but it's a different deal. You can gather them up. I mean, there are churches that wouldn't have anything to do with an effort just to reach people who had sexual addictions. They'd be afraid of it. I'm going to understand that at some level. But listen, there's a bigger group out there that just says they just use it too much. Go.
With regards to your statistics that you have shown, based on that survey, is it per 100 or per 1,000? 75, 25 for the Adventist University?
Those are proportions. Those weren't rates. Rates go by 100 or by 1,000. These are proportions. Yeah. Clarence, what's going through your mind? You're such a thoughtful guy. Don't you have something to say? He does. He always says such smart stuff. Yeah, there's a...
I am curious. That's somebody else ahead of you.
He's also very humble.
Well, I am curious about, do you have any idea of Internet addiction in terms of just generally addicted to the thing versus specifically porn?
No.
No, okay.
No, we know that at least for porn, that we know that 47% of the families polled said that porn is getting in the way of their relationship at home. So you know if the Internet, even if they're not doing porn, is getting in the way of relationships, you just know that's the case. Yeah, Jack.
Yeah, I had a...
He's trouble too.
I had a dentist in my church that resigned his position as an elder And there was no reason why.
Yeah.
And then he came to me and said, by the way, he said, I have a porn addiction.
Yeah.
About ruined his family. And it was a year and a half later, he'd been going through the steps and everything else, got into a program. And then he came to me and wanted to know if he could start a group at the church.
Yeah.
And it started. You know, he got it going there. And 2/3 of my elders joined it.
Praise God. He did it and he joined. And I'm happy for those results. This is very, very, very common stuff. This isn't a little problem out there, folks. This is everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 comments. What you said is so very true, and the more you talk with and actually are sincere with men, it comes up very regularly.
It does.
One friend shared with me a program, and I'm sure you have lots of suggestions, but this was a real blessing to us, and he actually then does it for some friends that wouldn't have the control, but the program OpenDNS, the website where you can actually set your web your wireless router in your house.
Yeah.
And then all the interaction within the house has to go through that, and it's a domain name server, and you can block out porn sites and all those things. It's free. OpenDNS.com. Go check it out. And so you set that in your house. Every computer, whether it's a laptop, whether it's a desktop, that goes through and accesses the internet is blocked. And if there is trouble in the home for the person that is the most computer savvy, which oftentimes is a father or something and the wife doesn't know or whatever it may be, or a teenager or even worse, you can have someone else hold the keys, as it were, set it up for you, for your house, with the password, and a real blessing. The second thing, which is in line with what you were sharing with Resurrections Require Funerals, it doesn't always happen, but my wife and I have been blessed by making a choice to go to bed together.
Neither.
Larger family, but it's good.
My only comment to that is it sounds good to me. Works for me. That's a great thing. Oh, please. Please.
I'm a layperson, not a pastor, and I'm wondering, do we in our churches generally have a person that is qualified to deal with situations like this?
I don't know.
Clarence,
don't know. No.
Has there been any studies of that? Do you have the idea?
Well, then the answer to that is get qualified. You know, we have lots of educated people in most of our churches, and if we don't know what to do, let's go ask somebody who knows what to do and get the training. This isn't rocket science. 12-step has been around for a long time. It's going to have a 12-step look to it. It is. It's going to have a Christ-centered 12-step look to it. It's going to be about relationships and commitment. It's going to be about confrontation when needs to be done. It's all those kinds of things. These programs are known to exist. Let's get into it. This is clean stuff. This isn't dirty stuff. This is about healthfulness. This isn't about ugliness. This is about getting yourself out of the pit. If you've never been a man who got up at 2 o'clock in the morning and drove 200 miles to an adult bookstore to buy a magazine, then you don't really get it. And I've lived that life. And it's a tough way to live. It's a tough way to live. And it's about time we started to be able to talk about this at some level without getting explicit. There's no reason to get explicit when we talk about this in public. But there are many of us out here who have had these problems. There are many of us out there who have these problems. And let's get it on the table. You know what? There's help available. There is. Please, you had something going on over here.
Yeah, just...
there you are.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Just wanted to share. I know there's a lot of helpful resources for internet filtering, internet programs that can be on your computer. I've talked with a lot of guys. I just came from seminary, and you know, there's several programs that are out there that people might not know about. One of them is called Covenant Eyes. Another one's called Safe Eyes.
Yeah.
What do you know from your research? What is the best program? What are the best programs that you've seen, the most effective programs that are not just, you know, there's some that are just blocking.
No, you can choose different
categories to block.
Listen, blocking is a very small piece of what's effective in this stuff. You block it, sure. Now you've done 0.13% of the work. Now let's move on to the rest of the work. The rest of the work is how do you build character? How do you become an individual who can be hit by this stuff and not knocked down by this stuff? What does a spiritual life look like? How do I impart that spirit? Because this is a spiritual problem. It's a spiritual problem.
Right. I guess I was just wondering. Yeah. That's all clear and true. I was just wondering from what you said.
I didn't give him the right answer.
That's the best answer. Overall, I was just wondering from what you've seen in terms of the software that you can get. There's freeware in there.
No, that's not my area. I would appreciate you telling them the one you found to be the best because I don't look for them.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I look at the behavioral side of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you betcha. That is not my. But did anybody have you? Can you answer that?
Well,
we want your best answer. How do you like that?
I don't know for sure. I know some pastors have used Covenant Eyes. That's not a blocking software. It's one that reports your usage to an accountability
partner.
Yeah. And then there's other sites that do similar.
We won't be using that one.
And that one's not so much a block. It's just so that you have an accountability partner. And it's effective.
Cool. Did you hear what I said about prevention? Did you understand the service part of it? Do you get it? Wouldn't you like to be the church in your town know to be the church of service?
Yeah, we were sent by our churches to come and gain some information. What we mean to say is that we'd like to impart this kind of lecture to our church members.
Good.
Because prevention is better than cure. And so how would we be able to obtain such kind of information? Do you have some handouts?
You can have anything I got except my computer. Well, I have a horse you can't have. No, and you can have this. I mean, it's on this computer right here, and it's for anybody to have. You can make copies? Can you get it off this person's computer? Could someone arrange for that? Because I'm going back to Idaho.
Well, there's a CD.
We don't have copiers in Idaho.
There's a CD being made.
Oh, cool. So you'll have it? Can you put this on the CD? Oh, this is video. Excuse me.
Yeah,
well, can you?
Do
you have a flash drive that he can copy onto?
Yeah.
Then you can. Do you have a pen? Do you have a pen?
Yeah.
Right. G. Hopkins.
G.
Hopkins. At Sandpoint.
Sandpoint.
Sandpoint.net. And write to me and say, I want that presentation on the internet. And I'll say, okay, I'll ship it off to you. G. Hopkins at sandpoint.net. And if you lose it, get a hold of Lloyd's office because they've got it. And they can give it. Julie can give it to you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Okay, that'd be the best way I can get it to you. Just send me an email. I'll email it to you. Yes, Clarence.
You know, I just wanted to, something that he said, in his workshop, he went over very quickly, but he really made the point, you made the point, that with service, we've got to go with the kids.
Absolutely.
And afterwards reflect. There's a school near me where the kids have to do a certain amount of service, and they can choose it, and they just go do it and turn in their time.
No.
But adults don't necessarily go with them,
right.
Either parents or faculty or church people, and they don't sit down and reflect. And I just didn't want that to fall short. We've got to do it with them, and we've got to reflect afterwards.
Three pieces.
Yeah.
Talk to them about what you're going to do. Second piece, go do it with them. Third piece, talk about what you did. That's the reflection time. That's the most important of the three. We're not building houses. We're not picking up all the garbage on the whole highway. We're changing activities often. We're giving kids 20 minutes a week, maybe 20 minutes twice a week, to go out and be helpful to somebody.
All right. So I've noticed only men have spoken so far.
Yes.
Anyway, I had a question actually.
Okay.
I want to know practically what advice would you give to a woman who was, say, suffering from this type of problem, and this was a household issue for her.
Whose husband was suffering from it?
No.
Okay.
Exactly. But say other than, I know there's, you said, programs and 12-step programs and getting advice from someplace else, but what would you advise her practically other than that?
Well, we're going to talk about it. You're going to sit down with that guy and you're going to say, today's the day we start talking about this, and we're going to talk about this with a smile on our face forever. And we're going to talk about where you've been on the Internet, where you're going on the Internet. I'm going to let you know how much I think the Internet's getting in the way of the family, but you better do that in the best of spirits, because now you're talking about an intervention. It'd be nice if you could just go shut it off. Well, you know, it's kind of like taking away cigarettes from a smoker. That's kind of like taking heroin away from an addict. And you just took away the thing that makes me feel the best. Okay? So let's start the discussion, but then let's go get some help. Let's let you go get some help. Go to an Al-Anon meeting. Check into it, because they have them that have to do with pornography and the Internet also that aren't just alcoholics. But it's a codependency thing. And as long as you ignore it, you're allowing it to happen. You have to become a part of the solution. But pastors, please, ask the question. Tell me about the computer. How much time you spending on the computer? How do you think, if it's just a guy talking to you, it's time to talk to the woman. What do you think about the computer? Because it'll be a different perception. It's going to be a different perception. Yeah. Another one, please.
Okay. You might have already addressed this. I had to step out for a second. But I have a loved one who's actually going through this. It's a male. And the thing is, as you know, this kind of addiction is something that's very secretive, so it's not really something that can be monitored.
It doesn't smell either. It doesn't. You can't smell it.
I never thought about that. But I'm just wondering. I've approached them actually with it, and you know they've said, "Oh, that's not a problem."
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
all this
that.
Stuff. What are some of the indications?
Oh,
that
I
still
can give you those. Those are easy.
There's still a lot of time on the computer.
This is simple. This is very, very simple. Time. This stuff takes time. And I really mean that. Late to meetings, late with responsibilities. The little girl goes to the door. She knocks on the door and says, "Daddy, it's time for dinner." She goes back a half hour later and says, "Daddy, it's time for dinner." She goes back 45 minutes later and says, "Daddy, it's time for dinner." That's a problem. It's a content problem. Get after it. That's not maybe a problem. That is a problem.
Correct.
It's
but
time
that,
spent.
But that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a pornography problem.
If the door's locked, it does.
What if the door is not locked?
Well, I don't know. You can make up as many situations as you choose to. We can debate that all night long. Pornography is an extremely common reason for that behavior. No, it can be gambling. Yeah, or it can be gaming. I've got a relative in the family who gets on gaming at midnight, plays till 5 in the morning, every single night. You know, it doesn't have to be porn. But boy, I tell you what, you know, I don't know what you'd choose. Well, I don't know. Pick your poison.
Okay. And then the second part of that was, is this just something that someone can overcome, or does it have to be something that's spiritually overcome? You know what I mean?
No, I think it's a spiritual problem. It's my belief that it's a spiritual problem. People who go into treatment, there's literature on this, expect a spiritual component in order for it to be effective.
Right. Okay.
If you're looking at behavior change, you need a spiritual component.
So if they say they've overcome it, then they're just
No. They're not ready for recovery yet. So you don't say, "Okay, I'm going to ask you in a month. Let me know when you're ready." Because the first step is admitting that you're powerless over your addiction. Powerless over your addiction. You don't have any... Have you ever... I've got a cousin who's a doctor who weighs over 400 pounds. Medical doctor. That's called addiction. Not called stupid. Stupid's a different deal. Word not to be used on people. Maybe not even on any animals, actually. But it's not about lack of information. And a good doctor, by the way. A huge one, but a good one. Hey, we've all got family who are suffering from something, don't we? My kids have me. It's got the old daddy thing, you know. Yeah, Jack.
You were sharing. You were sharing the other day in the class about the problem with teenagers after school.
Yeah.
This is one of the key points as far as for the service. Yes. Was to get something for teenagers
to do,
whether it's in your church
absolutely.
Or the community after school.
After school.
And maybe you might want to elaborate on
you
that.
You bet. 62% of, in one study, 62% of teen pregnancies occur in the girl's own home between the hours of 3 and 6 in the afternoon. Okay, so it's happened at your house when mom and dad are at work. And, you know, we always put an S on this word parents when half of our kids only have one. which, you know, kids can still do well. I didn't even come to talk about this. You want a whole lecture on adolescence, I'll give it to you. But kids still do well when parents aren't doing well, when they have somebody else who matters in their life. Be that person. Be that person. Let me tell you a story. I was teaching a class in Kenya, and just was a one-day thing. The students needed 10 hours of public health seminar to graduate, so they sent me over to give them 10 hours on one Friday so they can graduate on Sunday. And so there were like 65 students, mostly doctors and nurses and a few health educators. And I described this concept called resilience, and I said, you know, some kids grew up in very, very bad environments and do very well. And they almost always do well because somebody mattered. Somebody made a difference in their life. There was a key person to step up and say, I'm here to pick you up. Let's go fishing. Let's go whatever it is. I don't know whatever it is, right? Let's go do it whatever it is. And so I said, you know what? Gerald Hager's got a story about this, Dan. And Gerald, it's his son-in-law, and he was from a family, and he was left at age 13 or something and took care of himself, and there was a somebody that really turned this kid around. He's a great kid. He's a great adult doing fine. So I asked the class, I said, is anybody here resilient? And a lady, an American lady with blonde hair, raised her hand, and she said, I'm resilient. And I said, what's your risk? And she said, my father was married 7 times, and he was an alcoholic. So she's getting her master's degree in public health through Loma Linda. I'm thinking, yep, you're resilient, all right. So I said, so you should have had sex at an early age, multiple sexual partners, sexually transmitted infections repeatedly, teen pregnancy, multiple teen pregnancies, and early initiation of drug use, multiple drug use, and academic failure. That's your risk. Okay, you grew up in a family, and that's your risk, of non-family, actually. What do you do today? She says, I'm a doctor in a mission hospital. I'm going, so I'm getting goosebumps, you know. I'm going, so what's the story? And she said, when I was a little girl, and everybody's got to remember this story, because you need to tell this story. She said, when I was a little girl, a lady came to me, she probably had white hair, probably my age. I'm elderly now, I just turned 60. And she said to me, hey, can I pick you up and take you to my church this weekend? The people there are really nice. And so the little girl said, yeah. So she picked her up, and guess what? The people there were really nice. And she can't remember a sermon that was ever preached, but she remembers how much they cared for her. And they engaged her, and they included her. They turned her life around. She came from a no-win family to becoming a doctor in a mission hospital in Africa, working on a master's degree in public health. And it happened because one little person said, can I take you to church? The people there are really nice. I told that story in Ephrata, Washington about 2 years ago when I spoke for church there, and a lady emailed me, and she said, hey, a woman came on Sabbath who doesn't come very often, but she happened to be there when you were, and she heard your story about the little girl. And she said, and she brought a little girl this weekend. And I wrote back and I said, that's half the equation. Are you nice? But that's the question. Because people don't leave this church when you're nice. They leave when you're not nice. You know, it says in Christ's Offerings lesson that the end of time won't come until the true character of Christ is revealed as people. And so I've asked groups all over the world, describe in one or two words Christ to me. And they say nice, kind, friendly, loving, caring, non-judgmental, helpful, the whole drill. You know the story. I said to this lady, I said, describe this doctor. I said, describe that lady. She said, nice, kind, friendly, loving, caring, helpful. Same way groups describe Christ. And so I say, describe Adventists for me in one or two words. And it gets quiet. And then they say, remnant, Sabbath, vegetarian, potluck. And that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for nice, kind, friendly, loving, caring. We're looking for, I know the Adventists are, they're the people who feed people. You know, they're the people who have a Coach for Kids program. Ever heard of a Coach for Kids program? That's where you go down to the local high school and say, call us if a kid needs a coat this winter. So they call you. My wife and I had our own last year. We bought one coat. We can afford one coat. I got friends lined up to buy bunches of coats. No one's calling. But we got our own Coach for Kids program. And nobody knows who did it. We don't care if they don't know who did it. We're just putting coats on kids. It said, that's what it says in Matthew 25. It said, did you put coats on kids? Did you clothe them? You know, that's what it says to do. So we got our own Coach for Kids. It's kind of cool. You know, there's one little girl running around Coeur d'Alene with a coat on now. Don't know who she is. Doesn't matter. She's got a coat. And Dr. Elder was asked in this class in Kenya, he said, Dr. Elder, how do you change people? you're treating people with AIDS. How do you change them? How do you get people homosexual to change? And he said, I don't change people. I love them. The Holy Spirit changes. You do your work. You let the Holy Spirit do its work. I've gone way out of context and way out of, it's like, don't you hate it when you get non-pastors to come? Anyway, it's been a pleasure. I'm done. It's been a pleasure. I've made some new friends here, haven't I? I have, a bunch of them. And Dan, it's good to see you. It's good to see you anyway. And I'm from California, and I hardly knew anybody here. I was in Long for 17 years. I guess you weren't. Although Clarence and Diana were at Long Island when I was there. That's about it. So I met some new people that I really enjoyed. And I have a prayer to pray. And I'm going to do that right now. And it's going to be simple. Dear Father in Heaven, give us that perfect visual acuity to recognize people who have needs. I don't think I see them. So make me see better so that I will see them. Thank you for making your message so simple to understand, because I, like so many others, need it as simple as possible. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for great opportunities you give to us. And thank you for allowing us to do your work at some level. In Jesus' name, amen. So thank you, everybody. It's been fun, yeah.